Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Dentistry is sort of on the extremes of healthcare. It's almost seen as outside of healthcare. And what you're talking about is bringing it as to be part of healthcare. The thing that stunned me is when we were talking earlier on, and you were talking about an extraction and endo and not using rubber dam. And when you were explaining it to me, it was almost like in my head a bit of a light bulb moment and thinking, flip, when, you know, for the guys that are listening, Miguel was saying, you know, if you were to rip something out of your mouth and then leave it exposed and then allow all of the rubbish that's in your mouth to go in there, is that going to affect you? And it made me think about policemen. I'm pretty sure when you're bitten by a human because your mouth is so disgusting, you might have to go and have injections for it just in case. So, Miguel, could you sort of explain and expand
That's a layman's version. Now we'll get the scientific.
Yeah. This is the non-clinician listening in sort of like.
So let's try and give you the because this is a long format chat. So first and foremost, one of the greatest tragedies in healthcare was the separation of dentistry from medicine. So in fact, it's two different colleges. That actually happened in the US about 200 years ago, let's put it that way. And that's it. You have two different colleges. And what it happened over 200 years, and of course more recently, is in society, it's almost as if the mouth wasn't part of your human anatomy. Mm-hmm. So whereas if you had a cyst in your lung, doctors freak out, or if you have a small benign tumor on your skin, your dermatologist freaks out. But magically, if you have that in your jawbone, the patient gets to decide if it's important or not. So my question is very simple. Do people, dentists and humanity, actually know that your teeth are embedded in bone marrow? Because your jaw, maxilla, is part of your skeleton. Moreover, it's part of your skeleton in your skull, very close to your brain, sinuses. Mm. And started thinking about this. And what is the most common treatment over the last 2,000 years? Is a tooth extraction. It's predicted that over 30 million teeth are extracted in the US every year. 15 million root canals are performed every year in the US. That's 48,000 a day. And a large majority are not done with a rubber dam, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But let's step back. And so when you take a tooth out, you call it tooth extraction. Mm. And the dentist says, yeah, I did it. Okay, go on now.
I've got the tooth. We're sorted.
Congruent to our previous conversation, what's the measure of success? Is it taking the tooth out or a successful bone healing? So what actually happens is that bone marrow is exposed, and that should never happen. Exposed bone marrow is very, very bad in a surgical setting, let alone inside your saliva with 400 different pathogens, fungus, virus, protozoa, and nobody can argue this. So any good periodontist can just go to the literature and understand that there's a bunch of nasty bacteria and fungus that live in the sulcus. Now, let's say you are 22, 23 and have a healthy oral microbiome. But most people extracting teeth do so and will have bridge work and old implants and peri-implantitis and periodontal disease, or they're extracting a tooth that's had a root canal done many years ago with a cyst or a fractured tooth, you know, for whatever reason. And that root canal was done without a rubber dam, as the majority around the world are. Why? To save time. Why? To save money. Why? To see more patients. Why? To make more money. And that's why it's one of the cornerstones of slow dentistry. That's the only plug I'll do. And but to say we have to start looking at this from an immunological perspective and not from a mechanical perspective. The treatment isn't the extraction. The treatment is the successful bone remodeling done pathogen-free in the human being that you've just done this treatment to. So why are we extracting teeth in the first place? And do we have the epigenetic or immunological capacity to properly do this? Well, orthopedic surgeons believe we don't. Why? Well, we don't operate bone marrow in a non-sterile setting.
Mm.
So everybody in orthopedic surgery, all the hip replacement guys, the guys that are setting your bone, the brain surgeons that are going through the skull, all of the orthopedic surgeons, the football knee experts, they will operate in a clean, sterile environment with sterilized gloves, and they'll suit up like astronauts. Because bone marrow cannot get contaminated, and have the luxury of suturing everything, bandaging, cast to protect that bone marrow. But why not in the mouth? Just answer that question.
Yeah.
And how come magically we are expecting this to not lead to systemic and chronic inflammation in our patients in the long time? And just because you are not doctors, but I'm sure you might be aware of that, chronic systemic inflammation in the human jaw will not cause any pain in 98% of the times, meaning there'll be no symptoms.
You won't even know.
We know that dry socket, which is the result of the clot falling out, happens in a large majority. There's a 10-12% in an average clinic because proper time is not taken to create primary wound closure with specific periodontal surgical techniques and wound flap management and all of that. And in order to save costs, collagen sponges are not placed inside them. So because it's time, it's a time factor. Remember, time is one of the vectors of excellence. Yeah. So with that said, let's say dry socket is very common. The number one treatment for dry socket is antibiotic. But like it says, a broad spectrum antibiotic doesn't kill fungus. So I actually believe we need to be really careful about tooth extraction. And I said this publicly on stage, we need to, and no surgeon or no dentist that knows science can argue that even the most recent literature from Professor Mariana Sanz, one of the world's most eminent periodontists in the world, published 2020 an article, you know, saying that some of the bacteria and pathogens in the periodontal socket can actually lead to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. They found in lab rats the pathogens of the oral microbiome in the brain. So what we're trying to look at here is, we've known from cardiology that if you have oral infection, you have a higher risk of endocarditis. And that's why we should really reduce the bacterial load in our mouth. And that's why we suggest, you know, that we should have a healthy microbiome. But here we are extracting teeth and letting that bone marrow for at least a few hours be exposed to what is one of the dirtiest cavities.
Going to what you were saying of medical and dentistry being separated 200 That's years ago, I was going to say, is that your answer?
That's a mistake.
They should be bought.
Dentists need a seat at the table of healthcare.
Right, yeah.
But good dentists.
Yeah.
Not political dentists. Real surgeons that understand microbiology, that understand immunology, and not just mechanics and beauty. Yeah. So we spoke about this last night. I asked you, what is dentistry? Well, dentistry is whatever you need it to be for that specific patient, given the weapons that you have and your capacity to resolve that. So it's kind of like saying, what is being a pilot? Depends what you're driving and how good you are.
Yeah,
because, you know, you could be a Sunday driver with a 1960s Bentley, or you could be a NASA spacecraft pilot flying the Challenger to space and back. Do you understand? So it depends on your training, your skills, and your weapons, right? And that's the difference between a Formula One pilot and a Sunday driver. So what I'm trying to say is, should a poor person have quality care than a rich person?
Yeah.
No?
No, they shouldn't.
No. Is human bone marrow different in the mouth than in the hip?
No.
So why are we treating it differently? Just because we have a different college? And why is the autoimmune experts around the world and all the cancer specialists around the world and all the people trying to figure out why so many people are sick? And just look at the statistics, Google it, go and say, what is the rise from the 1970s till today? It's going up and up, 150% a year. It's going up, 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 and up, and up, and up, and up, and up. Ask how many people do you know that has an autoimmune disease? Colitis, irritable bowel syndromes, And I, you know.
And you're linking these increases to dentistry?
Yes.
Wow.
Bad dentistry.
Yes, bad dentistry.
Mm. Bad dentistry. Mm.
Fascinating.
And yes.
Yeah, fascinating.
It was only when... The argument is, I'm not linking it. The linkage exists.
Right, yeah. You're explaining it.
Mm. And I'm not saying that it's causing it. Mm. I'm saying it's not helping it.
Yeah.
Mm.
That if you are battling cancer and you're battling systemic illness, one of the major things that happens in your bloodstream is inflammation. Inflammation is it's caused by cytokines or chemokines that are like smoke signals that your body produces to ask your immune system for help.
Right.
And if you've got chronic inflammation and these hidden inflammatory or low-grade chronic infection pockets in your mouth caused by not using a rubber dam or by not, you know, properly cleaning and debriding a bone. So you take an infected tooth out and you leave half of the infection in there because you're in a rush because your next appointment's waiting for you. And getting it the job done properly takes time and skill and probably, you know, patients not feeling comfortable because you want to be nice and effective. Then you've got these chronic deposits. And the only way we're diagnosing this in the UK today is a two-dimensional film x-ray when appropriate to take it. Don't you think, how many cancer specialists in the UK today ask for a comprehensive CBCT checkup looking for pockets of inflammation in the mouth? Sitting with dentists and saying, hey, let's figure it out. Yeah. Where could all this inflammation be coming from? I'm not saying it's causing it. I'm just saying we should know.
Don't you
think the patients have the right to know?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And you can't politicize this. This is science, period. Inflammation goes into the bloodstream and is disruptive everywhere it goes. And that's why I think dentists need a seat at the table. Good dentists that use a rubber dam. So I'm not anti-root canal. I'm anti-bad root canal.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-extraction. I'm anti-bad extraction.
I just think it's fascinating as a non-clinician. When you mentioned it earlier, I was thinking, you wouldn't go, and this is the thing that gets me, you wouldn't go and have an operation on your arm where they went into your bone and then basically everyone would go, I'll tell you what, we'll leave it for a couple of hours.
Or moreover.
and then I'll come back.
Let's level the playing field. Yeah. So just imagine a surgeon, non-sterile gloves, opens it up, works on your bone marrow, says to the patient, spit inside there, just like, be like dentist. Aren't you going to close that up? No, it will close on itself. What if it gets infected? Take an antibiotic. What about the fungus? Hadn't thought about that. Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, and then it is ludicrous, isn't it?
Five, 6 years later. Yeah. So here's something that's very interesting for you guys. In Cambridge, UK, there's a neuroscientist. His name is Professor Edward Bulmore. You can Google this. I had dinner with him in December in Cambridge. I went to Cambridge. This is the fanatic I am. He wrote a book called The Inflamed Mind. Buy it on Amazon. He's a genius, this guy. 30 years he's been in Cambridge. Got a Wikipedia page and everything. Very respected scientist. And in 2012, he came up with a novel theory that depression was caused by inflammation, not by sadness.
Ooh.
And so his theory was that depression is linked to chronic inflammation in your body. So basically, when you have inflammation caused by illness, you get depressed. But unfortunately, a lot of illnesses that you have don't have the symptoms that limit you having a normal life. So you've got this chronic inflammation in your body, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or what have you. And so your brain gets inflamed because inflammation, these cytokines do pass the blood-brain barrier. And that's a proven fact that nobody can argue. So if your brain gets mildly inflamed because of this ongoing chronic inflammation, you start developing symptoms like brain fog, anxiety, depression, all the way up to dementia, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And there's a lot of evidence that can connect those two, depending on how curious you are.
Wow.
And so the Cartesian divide that your brain is a separate entity to your body or that your mouth is separate to your immune system is just ridiculous.
Mm.
Your teeth actually have lymphatic system and a nerve in them. So when you are doing a root canal, technically it could be argued that you're operating the peripheral nervous system. And everybody knows from basic, even you know, that all your neurons are connected. All of them are connected. So if I'm using a non-sterile instrument inside the root canal, why would I think that that would not reach the brain?
It's only going to just stay where it
is. Why would I think that that's not going to reach the brain?
Yeah. It's not like there's a gateway.
Nobody can argue this. and you can use all the sterile things you can. So I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm just saying you should really do it properly.
Mm.
And that's why you can't do it in a rush. And everybody is doing it in a rush. Well, most people, specialists watching this, go, specialists usually do this properly. But like you said, specialists do this under specific controlled conditions. So I had a chat with Professor Bullmore, and we were talking about this. And if you buy the book, the very first chapter is Dental Blues, where he actually went to a dentist, had a root canal, and that triggered his mild depression. And that gave him the impetus to write the thesis. So everything is connected. And this is coming from the highest level. And if I tell you a first degree burn is bad, I don't have to argue with you that a third degree burn is worse, right? It's logic. So everybody knows periodontal illness is bad and can cause spikes in your blood bacteria. It's bad for the heart, bad for the brain. The top periodontists say this. So what about all that stuff in the bone left over by poor quality extractions or poor quality root canals?
I think it's fascinating.
We have all this technology in
there.
Why we have all this technology. That's why we work with hyperbaric oxygen therapy. That's why we work with the Bdmi lasers. Mm. That's why we work with infrared light. That's why
those light ozone things therapy. That you had, whatever it was.
We work with stem cells. So the job is to help patients that have outdated dentistry and have tried everything. And now they are like, could it be this? And we believe it is, and there's a lot of doctors around the world and a growing trend of integrative.
I say, are people sort of slowly, I mean, we saw those, I can only call it the light thing that you had.
Photobiomodulation.
And you're explaining that it helps to create sort of healing or whatever.
It accelerates mitochondrial energy production. They call the ATP38, and it's well known that the chromophores inside your cells, coming from when we were prehistoric, so light, you know, like photosynthesis. Mm. So we are beings of light. So everybody knows that light helps you produce vitamin D and so on. Mm. So different wavelengths can actually stimulate mitochondrial energy production. So when you have a traumatic experience like an extraction, you need to regenerate bone, collagen, soft tissue, nerve, blood vessels. And the faster that happens, the better the healing process goes. So I want to just zoom out a quick. Why are we extracting teeth? We're the only species on Earth that extracts teeth. It's really a challenge of thought process. Why are we the only species on Earth that extracts teeth? Why are we the only species on Earth that no longer has room in our mouth for our teeth?
Yeah.
Because we started farming 9,000 years ago. Food got softer.
Yeah.
Diet got softer. And epigenetics started kicking in. Facial anatomy changes. You know, you look at the Neanderthals with the big square jaws, and so because of our softer diet, because of, you know, more comfort and this and that, we devolved and stopped having room in our mouths for our teeth. So hence comes in orthodontics. We're the only species that has to straighten our teeth. Yeah. So technically, I actually think that in 100 years, we'll look back and say, oh, there was a dark ages of dentistry where we just let people run free doing whatever they want for profit.
Totally, to make them look good.
Totally unregulated. It's you know, and I'm in the industry. So and the reason is I'm not here for profit. I'm here to heal.
Mm.
That's why I became a doctor. And I always ask this question, should a rich person get better care than a poor person? And the answer is no.
Mm.
And so this is an institutional revolution that has to happen. We need to rethink the way we're teaching dentistry. And every dentist on earth has shame. They don't admit it, but they're not a real doctor. Well, guess what? You are.
Yeah.
You're a real doctor. You do it right. You're a real doctor. When you do it right.
Because you're part of healthcare.
There you go.
Wow. It's a real interesting one, isn't it, really? When you think of the big hoo-ha that it was about, you know, you're not a doctor, you're a dentist.
So when you get it right.
Interesting.
And I actually think, so I have this thing on my website, miguelstanley.com, second plug. I don't sell anything, but it's just free. But to say that the sentence is, I believe the golden age of dentistry is yet to come. And I don't mean by profitability. I mean by seat at the table. I mean by recognition of the doctors,
Yeah.
We've always been the poorer relative of healthcare. And you started this big question by on the fringes of healthcare, so on the outskirts. And I actually think, I think we're in the core of it. I think we're in the, you know, everything starts in the mouth. Our first breath, our last breath, our first meal, our first kiss, the first word spoken, the expression of joy. The mouth is the center. There's more connections between your teeth and your brain than almost any other organ. It's connected in your bone marrow. It's part of your vitality, your chewing, your expression, your phonetics, everything. Your skeletal support, the mouth is super important, and we shouldn't touch it lightly without a good treatment plan, good materials, technology, the right amount of time and some experience to know what we're doing, and the financial motivation to get rich off that is wrong.
But it's, I suppose it's that, that classic thing that, that most people, it's just teeth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things one of the dentists said to us years ago, he said, you know, if people worked out how valuable their teeth were, they would really look after them so much better. He said, you know, if you sort of said, I think he said at the time, what was it, 32 teeth or something in your mouth? And he said, you know, if you said to someone, if you lose all your teeth, it's going to chew £50,000 to
My Emily, my granddaughter, she's three, and I repeatedly say to her, only brush the teeth you want to keep.
Yeah, but it's more importantly, isn't that with everything?
Yeah.
So why are people smoking? Smoking is one of the greatest killers, yet they still do it. And you go to any gas station in the UK, because this is mostly for the UK market, but anywhere around the world, depending on your height. So if you're so high up till the age of 10, all you see is sweets, crisps, sugars, and toys. The second you get past the counter, all you see is alcohol and tobacco. So what I'm trying to say
that's
is...
That's very true.
I pay attention with that, you know? So I've been paying attention for a long time. And I do believe in Darwinism. Mm. And if people don't want to think their teeth are healthy, let's hope they don't procreate too much. I'm joking. No, I am joking. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know... that will be perpetuated. We know alcoholism is passed down from generation to generation. We know that, you know, drug abuse is passed down from generation to generation. And I think, you know, people that don't take care of their mouth will be passed down from generation to generation. And let's face it, that if you do have an unhealthy mouth, you'll be a least productive member of society. You'll have less access to better jobs. You'll have a, you know, you won't have the, perhaps the partner that you desire so much. And, you know, nobody... in, you know, in the top levels are going to hire somebody with bad teeth. And more importantly than aesthetics is the health, you know. And if the UK government and the NHS just understood one simple thing, which was if they got it right the first time, if first time a patient is being treated on the NHS, that instead of a 50-minute appointment was a one morning appointment, and they got that filling right the first time, that would never... 3 years later, 5 years later, become a root canal. And then 5 years later, become an extraction. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Because
if you want to think on the longevity and the success of your population, you should get that right the first time. And I think, you know, it's a very big challenge. There's going to be a few generations that will lose out. And, you know, there's these myths that go around like, oh, you should visit your dentist twice a year, right? Wrong. You should visit your dentist twice a year if you have all your teeth healthy in your mouth. If you've got a lot of dental work and bad oral health and you smoke and have a bad diet, you should probably visit your dentist every month. But most people are lazy and they only go visit the doctor when they're sick or when it hurts.
When it hurts.
And that's why most hospitals and health centers around the world today are not health centers, they're sick centers. Let's call for probably. You don't go to hospital to get healthy, you get, you know, to stay healthy. Oh, I'm super healthy, I'm going to go to hospital to stay healthy. So, you know, it's a health center. No, it's not a health, it's a sick center. Let's be realistic.
It's true.
Let's, we have to, you know, we're in the era of changing words and the meaning of things. So let's, you know,
call it what say, it is.
Oh, this is a whisper, you know, it's like, but the case, you go to these like fancy restaurants and they've got this long name and it's like meat and potatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But let's call it meat and potatoes. That's what it is.
With a Samsung chew.
Yeah.
The promotion of health is very, very important. You know, I'll give you an example. Vitamin D. I published on this. How many surgeons in the UK today place implants without measuring their patients' vitamin D? Let's say most of them.
Yeah.
how many heart surgeons, how many surgeons of any surgery will operate a patient in the UK today without a blood test?
I don't think any do.
Very few.
So why are dentists operating human bone marrow, putting a titanium or ceramic fixture in human bone marrow without a vitamin D test, when it's been incredibly well documented that if you have low vitamin D, that your bone remodeling will be inept, and just there's a 150% higher degree of failure around that. It's like preparing yourself for failure. See,
it's fascinating, isn't it, really? When you say it from that in...
There's no other way.
That's in healthcare, like, where it says it's an accepted fact, then you're right. Why would someone put an implant?
Doctors say, I'm just a dentist. Well, that's your fault, man. I'm not just a dentist.
Yeah.
I'm a physician of the oral cavity, and I will not go into anybody's bone marrow without blood tests.
I'd say you are setting yourself up for failure, aren't you? Mm-hmm. If that vitamin D isn't going to help your bone regeneration.
Ask me why I do it. I do it because I really care for my patients. And you want to ask me something else? Ask me if I operate smokers.
Do you operate on smokers?
No, I don't operate on smokers. Thank you for asking.
Good question.
Okay, just came up with that.
Yeah. So why would that be?
Because I only want to treat people that want to be healthy.
Because they're not going to be looking after them. Yeah, okay.
This is really important. First, fully private. Don't have a boss. I get to choose my patients. Patient selection is the number one criteria for success. So when I said good treatment plan, good protocol, good, right? Well, if you study the evidence, everybody knows there's an increased morbidity of your surgical sites. I'm not talking about veneers. If you do veneers, I'll do orthodontics on the smoker, fine. I won't do any surgery, and I won't take on perio patients. So under the gum, if you are a smoker, I'll give you a chance to stop smoking, but you have to prove you stop smoking before I take you on.
Yeah.
Because
would you do a test? You know, what's that test they do for life insurance?
No, honestly, if I need to take a test, then I've got the wrong patient.
Right, okay.
I'm not a policeman. There has to be trust. Trust is the foundation of every relationship. But what I'm trying to say is, why would I use all of my hard-earned knowledge and this beautiful team I've created with all of this beautiful firepower to heal on a person who doesn't really want to be healthy?
Mm.
Doesn't make sense. It's not congruent. And I personally believe in personal congruence.
Mm.
So there's a team effort. And if the patient doesn't want to be on the team.
And also, because you say that success is very important, and it is, that patient is setting you up for failure. So you can control everything you want in this environment.
They get really offended.
But if they're not matching that,
they're really offended. Yeah, that patient get really offended. What do you mean? Do you know who I am? Yeah, you need to go stop smoking.
You just mentioned it about your fabulous team, and we're talking to you, but obviously, you can't do this alone, and 100% of people, 100% of your team of people. So how do you get your team to be as inspired and as energized?
Very honest.
Right. And that starts from the beginning when people join the team.
Treatment planning. The quality of the dentistry practiced here is what dictates the truth. There's no schemes. There's no brushing under the carpet. There's absolute integrity in every action we do. And that is the inspiration. It's not my words, it's my actions.
Mm. And that in turn builds the culture.
100%. Somebody comes in here and tries to say, it doesn't work.
Would you say you're difficult to work with?
If you're not good. If you're dishonest, if you're not good. I'm not saying if you have a bad day.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, I'll go to hell and back for my team. I'm there for them. I'm a team leader. But everything starts with me, you know. I show up on time.
You set the tone.
I'm not late. I'm many times the last out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's emergencies, I'll be here. If anybody needs help, I'm there to back them up. You know, I'm it's a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm difficult to work off. If you commit to something and you don't, you know, one thing is saying, hey, I need help. Other thing is saying, I can do this, and then not asking for help.
Mm.
And you make a mistake.
And cocking it out.
Because then you're affecting the reputation of everybody in the team. And, you know, if you think about it, if you have a warped system whereby the dentist only gets rewarded financially when he finishes the treatment, what's his incentive to stop when he thinks, if I don't finish this, I don't get paid?
Mm.
Mm.
I better call somebody else to finish this and forego my payment so this patient can get treatment. Mm-hmm. That happens here, and trust me, we have ways of making that happen, yeah. right? But is that happening everywhere?
Mm. It's interesting.
Mm. Are you good at delegating? There's lots of decisions to be made. I've been here lots of things bypass you.
I've been here 2 hours with you, and the clinic's packed. Running successfully, and that had to happen because of my lecture circuit. So sometimes, you know, I'll go travel, I'll spend 4 days out of the clinic, you know, to go give a conference or but holidays, or you know, this clinic's open all year round.
Yeah,
we don't work on weekends. Never worked on weekends.
Yeah,
quite right too.
And we shut, you know, 7:30, 8, everybody's home,
which is good. On the decision making thing, is there a decision in your life that you regret, that you change?
Nah.
It's funny, is it Mo Galdor, who used to be at Google X, he has this thing about the eraser test. And he says that if you change one decision in your past, you have to accept that it would change everything going forward of who you are. So even going back to the business situation.
Yeah,
that...
you know, it's... life's fun, man. It's, you know, if you don't take a few punches, you never know your weight, your value. And... let's look at football, you know, you just had the World Cup. How fun would it be if there was no competition, no winning, no losing? You know, there was how many, I don't know how many teams went, but everybody went home miserable except for one team. You understand? And that's just life. And we're breeding a younger generation of humans that are all about, you know, equality of opportunity and not, you know, hey, quality of outcome. And quality of outcome comes from grit, hard work, dedication, sweat. You know, that one of the iceberg, you know, it's like, this is the iceberg. No, that's the iceberg.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And there's, it's damn hard, man.
It is.
It's damn hard. It's not, it's collaboration, ethics. You know, there's no, this, you know, what's the formula for success?
Oh, but
suffering.
The thing is, though, people expect, and, you know, this is a generalization, but a lot of younger guys expect that they can become brilliant and wealthy sort of almost overnight, can't they? Because they've seen, you know, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, or whatever. But actually, there's 20 years.
Well, just ask those Instagram and TikTok influencers how many of their supposed followers or friends pay their rent. I mean, maybe they actually do get a lot of money from that. Don't get me wrong. A lot do. And I'm not, man, I wish I had that as well. Trust me. I'm not discrediting that. Getting a lot of followers is cool. That's something to monetize. It's a real business. And honestly,
but not everybody can do it.
But not everybody
can do it. I think that's the thing for me.
Music, man. I mean, how many people actually get paid? People pay to go and watch a musician do.
Well, I was reading something, I can't remember the number, but when I read the number, it sort of blew my mind. It was something like how many songs are uploaded to Spotify every day. It's like, it was something in my head, it says 60,000. I don't know if that's true, but you know, you've got all of those songs, and how many actually ever become anything?
My word of advice to all the young dentists out there is, before trying to figure out what can make you successful financially, find out what can make you happy. Find your comfort zone in dentistry. There's 100 treatments. You know, you could be the best guy at doing bleaching. You could be the best guy at doing bonding. You could be the best guy at doing ortho. But just find something that you actually enjoy and you want to grow into, so that if everything else crumbles around you, you have that. It happened to me.
That's an experience, isn't it? I'm telling you.
You know, you don't have to be good at everything, but find something you're good at other than making money or being famous at, right? And just say, this is my craft. And if everything else fails, if, you know, my marriage fails, or there's a war, or there's something, I don't know. You look at, you know, I've got Ukrainians here in my clinic, you know. I mean, this, I've got a young girl. The building she worked in blew up, right? I mean, so your life can change at the flip of a switch, man. So what I'm trying to say is, if you're good at something, you'll always have a job. And being the craft of dentistry, which is founded on expertise and knowledge and scientific and academic values, not just on how to sell it, that's the foundation of everything we do. And I just think that we need to be really careful to not lose sight of that.
Well, that was your rock, wasn't it? That was your rock.
Look, lots of the things you talked about today, as non-clinicians are quite challenging. You're talking about big ideas and where things are changing. And there's a guy, Matthew Syed, that's written a book called Black Box Thinking. And within the aviation profession, you've also got the black box on the aeroplane. And if an aeroplane in a catastrophic situation goes down, the data from that black box gets shared across the profession on the basis that it's so catastrophic, we all have to learn immediately. Do you feel that there's sufficient confidence and freedom in dentistry for people to share failure in that way, so the profession all learns and comes up to speed quickly? Or is there a risk of litigation and shame of things not going well?
It's a great question. And the truly great dental educators in the world on stage will show their failures.
Mm.
The truly great ones. I'll give you an example. Joe Kahn, one of the greatest periodontists, he's very famous at showing how long, failure, how he overcomes that with science,
mm-hmm.
and, dedication and craft and skill. So if the younger generation watching this podcast of yours actually goes to the proper scientific meetings and learns from the greats, they will see a lot of failure being presented on stage, where the real knowledge is acquired, not on social media.
Mm.
Because the fear of learning on social media is that you'll only show the good stuff. And you'll show the bad stuff for the gore or the whatever, right? But there's, and again, I think it's very important also to have a kind of a bulletproof mindset, because there's always going to be your critics that'll be like, eh. But if you're bulletproof here and you've got a good moral compass, I said this the other day, that dentists shouldn't criticize anybody without offering a solution, or at least how they did it, with proof. So you'll find a lot of dentists that are just like trolls, right? Which is, every human is a troll. A bunch of those are going to be dentists. That's pretty bad, right? And so they're trolling, somebody, but now they're going to say, oh, all right, cool, man. Show me how you did this. Because criticism is easy. Solution building, constructive solution building is difficult. So don't listen to critics unless they offer a solution. That's my first one.
Mm.
And I do think, there's platforms for sharing failure in a collegial and proper way, which are scientific meetings.
Mm.
And you just have to go to them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Seek them out. Yeah.
You have to go there, not for the poster, not for the Instagram, but to sit in the front row and sit and have a take-home message and learn.
Yeah.
And I do think that doctors, I've seen a lot of them talk about their personal success and all of that.
Mm.
I personally like to give a take-home message of, this is what happens when things go wrong. This is how you avoid failure.
Mm.
And I know that because I failed doing it the first time around. So I think more than anything, a doctor, and I consider myself to be a doctor, is a teacher.
Mm.
Mm.
Rule number one, you are a teacher. You have to teach your patients, and you have to teach your colleagues, and you have to teach the future generations. And if you're not doing that, then...
We've talked a lot about dentistry. What makes you happy outside of dentistry? What gives you the buzz when you leave the practice?
I have two young daughters who will be 3 and 5. So I'm 50. They've got young kids. So you're a granddad.
I am.
And you've got grandchildren the age of my children, and I'm the same age as you. So
I'm not sure that who that makes you feel good or bad.
Oh, no, that's amazing. I'm just trying to say is I spend a lot of time at home.
Good.
And I'm very grateful that, I let off a lot of steam when I was in my 30s and 40s. And, what makes me happy is a very quiet family life.
Mm.
How did you meet your wife? Because she's Ukrainian, isn't she?
My wife, I'd like to say is, but was a very, very successful international model. She was the guest girl. She had contracts with Louis Vuitton and Fendi and all the big companies.
Right.
And so she traveled around the world. And I met my wife in New York, Saks Fifth Avenue.
Oh, really? You were in the right shop.
I was lecturing. I had a lecture the next day at NYU, 2012.
Imagine if you'd been in Macy's. Could have been so different.
So different. We were introduced.
You started me as more of a sex with that, and you're not a guy.
That's right, yeah.
And that's, it's crazy, man. I got married after 5 weeks. Well, I got engaged after 5 weeks.
Wow.
So.
And just lastly, there's an extension there, because obviously your wife being Ukrainian, which would naturally make your father-in-law Ukrainian, and when the war started, could you just give us a very sort of little snapshot of what happened? Because you went and hired yourself a van and drove
to Poland.
You drove from Portugal to Poland. Yeah. So what was that? You charted this on Instagram, didn't you, to kind of,
yeah,
let people
honestly,
know.
Listen, man, it's at the time, my family was very nervous.
Mm.
My father-in-law, because we bought them out in January because we saw the troops.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And although Biden was saying, yeah, it's going to happen.
Mm.
We were all like, no, there's no way they're going to invade. But then the Ukrainians and, was like, yeah, this could happen.
I think the rest of the world didn't think he was
going to trust those Russians. And so we bought the family out from Kiev. And my father-in-law, who's actually a reservist, but he's also a cardiac patient, he's like, I want to go. And if any rational, Ukrainian man wanted to go there and help. So unless they were doing, support stuff outside.
Yeah.
And a very good friend of mine, Dr. Nazari, he's quite a famous dentist from Kiev, posted on his social media. It's like, guys, we need... And all, this is he's a really superstar dentist, he's like always cool and tech and stuff. And then literally the next day he posts something like, we need garrots and tourniquets and we need anesthetic and battle wound. And you're like,
escalated quickly.
And then this is a guy I know, right? Yeah. I've lectured around the world.
Different than what before.
I'm like, whoa, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, he called me, man, we need help because there's bullets and stuff happening and people are coming back and we're running out of this and running out of that. And I have been, I've been several times to Kiev and I love that country. It's a beautiful country and they just want peace. They just want, just want to be an independent, nation. And anyway, so I just didn't think. I'm like, well, my father-in-law has to get there. They've shut the airspace. He has to go to Poland anyway and drive.
Mm.
And I've done a few road trips in my life before. And I just I'll just rent a van and take...
This isn't really a road trip, is it? I mean,
it's not drinking.
I'm going to say, this isn't Route 66, is it?
I called my buddy Mike, my co-pilot, said, you be my huckleberry, so I'll be your huckleberry. So then we just came to the clinic one night. I went to a pharmacy. I spent quite a bit of money on antibiotics. And I'm a doctor, so I could, And I went to my own personal stock and we just filled with heart monitors and stuff like that. And we drove to Krakow and we got another second group to fly out. I got a bunch of German dentists in Leipzig to also get to another van full. And the second I left, I just did stories on Instagram.
And
I just blew up. And then I realized I was the first person, at least from Portugal, doing that trip.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then...
Because it was very early on.
Yeah, it's like...
The war was literally just starting, wasn't it? Yeah.
And so, then I was helping a lot of people figuring out how to do it. And then the cool thing about it is that you learned about inherent kindness and everybody wanted to help. And, it's been a year now.
Mm.
And
as well as delivering medical supplies, you actually helped a couple of families as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I brought back two mothers and their three children back. And we drove them all the way back to Portugal and got them a house and all of that. And then behind the scenes, I think, if you're going to do charity, you should do so in silence, not brag about it.
Yeah.
Get on with it, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think what was great, though, is that because it was so early on, it was amazing raising awareness.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of happening in real time, which was powerful.
We then got a bunch of refugees here in Portugal and instantly, we hired two Ukrainian dentists.
Right.
Jay over here, you were already living in Portugal, right? So Jay was already living here. And if you ever meet Ukrainian people, they are just an amazing, amazing nation. And I can only hope that this war is over very soon.
Mm-hmm.
There's some challenging times coming as the spring comes. I mean, look, the Russians have nothing to lose right now. I did something though, that you might not be aware of. Christian Coachman, myself, we got together. We rallied about 250 dentists to co-sign a letter to all of the CEOs to stop working with Russia. And we had quite an immediate impact.
Mm. Yeah.
Saying basically stop right now. I mean, obviously, you can't blame all Russians.
No, 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 that's right.
Can't. I'm not a politician,
mm-hmm.
but that's who you voted for. So you've got to start a revolution, and revolution sometimes. Look what's happening in Tehran right now, man. Mm. People suffering.
Oh yeah.
All around the world, people are putting up revolution, and not always peaceful.
Mm.
And unfortunately, that's the price of change. You know, and it's really, really sad. It's happening.
Yeah.
So many good people suffering with this, and you know all the politics and all that's horrible. At the end of the day, I'm all about just simple, you know, people that just want to be happy and have a normal life, and you know, good, hardworking people that don't try and scam the system. That you know, that just want to contribute positively to society. And everybody, at least I know in Ukraine, are those. And most of these people that have fled, millions of women and children that fled, you know, these guys are all going to go back and rebuild their country. Yeah. You know, they're not economic migrants. These are real.
I
think it will be interesting as well when, you know, hopefully when it finishes and concludes. I think that for me, I think the West and the rest of the world might actually look at Ukraine in a very different way, because I don't think anyone
really thought about Ukraine twice.
How important Ukraine was.
Amazing, man. It's like even my, you know, my wife, she, even in the beginning, you know, this comedian actor Zelensky, and this guy's just such an inspiration, man. Just like, what a badass.
I was going to say, he's incredible.
We don't need a ride, we need more bullets. Come on, man. It's the greatest sentence. So, yeah, big fan. And I actually think once the storm is over, and hopefully, you know, all wars come to an end, just it's a matter of when, not if.
Yeah.
You know, it's a matter of how many people die to get that peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it will happen.
It will happen.
And, you know, the English and the French for 100 years. Let's hope it's not going to take that long. That's a fact, right? It's a historical fact.
North and South Korea still at war.
And now there's a tunnel connecting, you know. So, but with that said, when it's over, I think it'll be relatively, you know, good for Ukraine.
And
hopefully,
hopefully
we can stop all the, excuse my language, bullshit, and just get on with saving the planet. I think this whole thing of us and them is very bad as a species.
Yeah.
As a species, there's bigger things that than just your, you know, your GDP and your personal, you know, the belief of one dictator or one governor. You know, there's bigger things that connect us as a species.
Oh,
you know?
We're all working together on the same planet.
There you go. And I think that's hopefully this younger generation is going to figure that out.
Miguel, you've been so generous with your time.
Thank you. It's been
so much fun. We've covered a
whole wide-ranging gambit of discussion,
isn't it? As non-clinicians, lots of it is incredibly challenging, but so interesting. And we wish you all the luck in the world with what you're doing. It's been so much fun.
I really appreciate you coming out here and inviting me to be on the 100th.
Yes, it's our 100th episode.
I wish you guys all the success. And, you know, I don't think people know this. I'm actually a GDC licensed practitioner. So if all else fails, can you get me a job in the UK?
I think we've
come to London. Yeah, come to London. We'll look after you.
If you can get me a job, anybody's hiring, kind of know what I'm doing.
But he doesn't want to get paid in the last 5 years, so it's fine.
I'll only work on success fee. There you go.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
All right, guys.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, cheers, Miguel. Really appreciate it. Really good.
Thank you, man.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.